powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
This is Tom, Jake, and Stacy on 710 ESPN Seattle. Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Tom Wassel, Jake Heaps, and Stacy Ross.
I want to get into this Earl Thomas thing here in just a second. But first, on the huddle about an hour ago, we talked to Jermaine Ifedi. I need to give Jermaine a little bit of credit. He is somebody who, since he's been here, has been criticized and harped on and had the finger pointed at him, oftentimes rightly so, okay, because we know that he struggled. Every time he comes either in here, every time I've seen him, every time we've talked to him out there at during training camp, he comes in here with the biggest smile and a complete just willingness to talk about anything. I got to give him a lot of credit for that, because there are some guys, football players, whether they hear the criticism or not, they come in here and they're just sort of in a bad mood about it. Jermaine is never in a bad mood, always willing to talk, big smile on his face.
Absolutely, and that's something that it shows a lot of maturity about a particular player, and also understanding that, look, you're going to face criticism. That's the name of the game when you play professional sports, and the opportunity to have moments like these are better served when you are open and you are, you know, not divulging anything major. But when you come out here and like athletes before at different times, just try and do everything they can to get out, it doesn't really give the best representation of them. And being around Jermaine in the locker room and all that, he is that type of guy. He is a very much a happy guy. He is a, you know, I think over the last 3 years or so has really matured a lot before our eyes.
And he's worked a lot at it, too. We know that. We've talked to him about that, too. All right, so let's get to the Earl Thomas thing here. This is the topic that concerns us fans, and not really him. And I thought Salk brought up a good point the other day. The opportunity to boo Earl Thomas may not even really present itself, because they all just come out on the field together, and it's not like they're announced individually. But when I see somebody, probably on Twitter, or maybe I hear it on the radio, when I hear somebody say, anybody who doesn't share my same opinion on whether or not to boo Earl Thomas isn't a real Seahawk fan, that's one of those situations where I almost start to see red. Like, I see orange. Like, I don't get quite
to the orange level.
Right, yeah. like yellow alert or orange alert or whatever. When I see that, I just don't understand that type of thinking. This is a situation that comes down to the individual fan and how every fan feels. Right? This is a feel issue. It's an emotion issue. Mm-hmm. It's a debatable issue. It could really go either way. If you want to boo him for the way he behaved on his way out of here, I understand that. If you want to cheer him for all the great things he did while he was here, I understand that. I don't mean to be like so down the middle on this, but this is just one of those issues where it really could go either way. And when I see people saying, well, if you don't think that this way or that way, really?
Yeah. I agree. It's just you're telling people how they should feel and how they should react, and there's a lot of emotions. There's a lot of emotions for Earl Thomas, obviously, and how he felt, how this whole thing transpired. The one thing that I know from personal experience, just being in this locker room, being on the practice field with him, is that he loves the game of football. And when he was a Seattle Seahawk, he loved being here. He loved playing for this team. He loved, you know, playing with the guys next to him. I mean, he was a guy that... he is an all-pro player, and after practice, he's going, hey, Jake, when you're doing this, you're giving away where you're going to throw. And I'm like, what? Like, really? You're an all-pro player, first stringer, and you're watching me, the third-string quarterback, trying to continue to learn, and you're also going out of your way to give me pointers. Like, he just loved to talk about the game and be around the game. And so the thought processes, the things that he says doesn't always come across to the fan and all of that, but he loved this place. And so I'm not sitting here making excuses for the actions that he took, because I fully disagree with the way he left. But when you talk about, I can't wait to boo this guy. If you want to boo him because he's the enemy, I can understand that. Understand, you know, the actions that he had towards the team. But there were also so much good. And when you talk about, you know, cut number three here of Earl talking, to me, it's kind of says a lot about what Earl thinks of this place.
Yeah, I thought about it, you know, late at night. Hopefully, you know, they respect what I've done. You know, I get a couple of cheers, not too many boos. And, you know, whatever happens, happens. But hopefully it's love.
What does he mean late at night? when his brain finally goes out of football mode, he starts to consider other things?
Yeah.
When you're laying there, you're thinking about stuff. Yeah, thinking about your day.
I hope that they cheer me.
Well, I mean, there's so much conversation about Sherman last year, right? Yeah, in this place. And so Earl was around to kind of hear that conversation. And I think for any player like Earl, he doesn't view himself as the enemy in this town, in this organization,
he's not. I don't think even the people who would boo him, I don't think that they view him that way. I think it's more like, you know what? If I'm going to boo him, I just need to get that out of my system and off my chest.
Yeah.
And then everything's fine.
Yeah, I think people who boo often at sports don't usually have this like moral level of like, this is when I don't. It's like they just buy into it, right? And
right.
It's just the kind of fan they are. And I agree. I'm not going to tell someone how to be a fan, but what I will say is I don't think it makes you not a Seahawk fan, but I think that to really understand Earl as a person, and Dave was saying this before he left, and I couldn't agree with him more, is like maybe the most unique athlete that any of us have ever covered here, just as a person, truly one of the most unique people. I think it adds some context to that maybe wouldn't make you boo him or wouldn't make you see it in a traditional way. Like, his incentives for doing something aren't what you normally would think someone's incentives would be, right? Like, it's his thing with Carol wasn't like, I'm leaving out of selfishness or whatever. It was a very personal hurt and feeling of betrayal that he had with one particular person in the front office. He still had plenty of loyalty and care for teammates and for the city and for fans. And it was complicated. And so, you know, it's if you want to, fine. But I think to really understand the situation might make you second guess it.
Yeah. Real quick here, as we're diving into all of the, you know, personal side of it, for me, as I'm watching this game with Earl Thomas, it always makes me uncomfortable because Earl is, like Russell said in his press conference, he is one of the best safeties, not just in this era, but of all time. And he is a ball hawk. He is a disruptor. He's a guy that can make a ton of plays. Obviously, they've played a lot together, Earl and Russell, and there's going to be a really fun chess match there. If you go to cut number four, Earl talks about that very unique perspective.
Yeah, well, hopefully all those practices that I had against him throughout all those years pay off when I get out there on game day. But it's going to be a battle. You know, it's probably going to be wet out there. It always rains. It's going to be, you know, they're going to try to run a ball. Everything's predicated off the run game. And we also know that Russ can extend plays. And that's when he kind of works his magic, when he plays backyard football. And his receivers do a great job of just melting with him and creating space, boxing guys out, and creating leverages and coming up with big catches.
And that chess match is going to be one to really, really watch as you're watching this unfold. Because having Earl Thomas back there, you've got to be very careful with the football.
You want to make a bet on whether or not Earl picks Russell off?
Sure. I don't think it's going to happen.
Why?
Because I think as a quarterback, you get to dictate. You get to dictate a lot of stuff. And just like Earl knows a lot of Russell's tendencies, Russell knows how to manipulate and move Earl as well. So I Russell's been playing an unbelievable clip. I don't see that changing.
All right. Final message to Seahawk fans on this issue. Be nice to each other. Accept one another.
That ain't going to happen for everybody.
Be nice to each other. Three questions. Let's go.
It's time for Three Questions.
Can't wait for it.
Every day at 12 after 12, Tom Wassel's burning questions for Jake Heaps and Stacey Rost.
Enough with the "we gotta protect the kids" nonsense.
All right, guys, if we get this game this weekend, it's going to be a clean sweep of the AFC North. That's kind of rare, to sweep an entire
division.
Yeah, entire, what do you call it, interconference? It's inter. Intro would be in the NFC. Intra is like within interconference. See, we're learning things here. So, can that tell you anything about a team? If the Seahawks are able to sweep them, is that any kind of
I mean, see, okay, you might disagree with me. I think that it can tell you enough. I think that no matter how poor a division might be performing, to do a clean sweep of four teams is still pretty impressive.
Sure. I mean, from a statistical standpoint, but none of these guys are sitting there going, hey, we swept the AFC North.
That's
you
true.
Know,
but
it's an individual, you know, they take it as an individual team basis as this team's looking at. It's an interesting stat to look at. I also think the AFC North is a division that is
struggling
outside of the Baltimore Ravens. They gave up a dud game versus the Cleveland Browns. But, for the Seahawks, this game right here, the Baltimore Ravens, is going to be one of their biggest tests of the year.
Then how much credit can you give the rest of the NFC West? They're playing the same guys.
But they may not all get clean sweeps.
That's true. But, I mean,
now we're talking about a division. We were talking about earlier about a particular team.
If
you're talking about a whole division, then yes, obviously the NFC West is going to be more superior than the AFC North. That definitely goes to talk about the strength of your division.
The Ravens are the best team in this division, though. Let's face facts. I mean, if they beat the Ravens, that'll be an impressive victory in and of itself. Next.
Number two.
All right, this kind of goes back to what Jake was saying the other day about us doing a lot of hand-wringing over a 5-1 record. But would the Seahawks fan base benefit from a loss?
I would say...
Just to kind of get them re-engaged,
reinvigorated? No. I would say that when I look at this, no. I want them to continue to keep winning. The thing that has to happen for this team, I really think, to get the fans and everybody to stop, you know, kind of going, oh, man, is this team going to be a legitimate playoff team or not, is seeing the pass rush and seeing a defensive line and a defense start dictating to an offense, and you feel their presence out there. Because as to this point, you have not felt that. And you even look at Bobby Wagner, for example. Bobby has played good football. He has not played great football, and you have not seen that one game from him yet where it's just like, yep, that's why we paid this guy $18 million, that's why he is the unquestioned 99 rated Madden player overall. We just haven't seen one of those breakout elite performances from him yet, and there's not a bigger game that the Seahawks need him to do so than this one.
Yeah, maybe it's not necessarily losing that makes people feel a certain way, but winning differently instead of winning close.
You want to see him win by 20 points?
You want to see? Well, I mean, I think fans might feel differently about, more fired up about a win where they win by quite a bit. And there are plenty of fans that feel fired up enough as is. I think what I like about this question, though, is just how it's phrased as like a parent being like, well, let's see how much you appreciate it.
When you don't have it anymore.
Exactly. Oh, you hate oatmeal? Well, let's see how much you like having this for breakfast.
Next.
Number three.
Hey, Curtis, just so you know, I'm giving you the hand signals here down at the VMAC, even though you can't see my arm.
I really appreciate that, Tom.
Just habit.
It's working great.
All right, so Stacey,
I'll explain it.
Yeah, can you explain this story? Yeah. Evidently, we have a problem here with sign stealing in the playoffs.
Uh-huh. Okay, so this is, according to a person familiar with the situation, this is from the New York Post, so there's some bias there. Mm. The Yankees coaches were upset with a whistle coming from the Houston dugout. This is in game one of the ALCS, and they believed it was part of a sign stealing program that the Astros have been long suspected of using at home. A person confirmed an angry Yankees dugout let the Astros dugout know the team wasn't happy. And then someone with another team said, I don't think it's any secret they do it. They bang pipes. We've heard they have cameras around the park and that some way of communicating originates from their bullpen. So then the MLB had a verdict and they found that the Astros were cleared of any wrongdoing, but people are still kind of mad about it.
They investigated all this?
Well, it says a person connected to an AL West team, so that narrows it down, said, again, I don't think it's a secret they do it.
Did they find any evidence of them banging on pipes?
I don't get that part.
Who's banging on pipes?
I thought they were whistling. I couldn't tell if it was like an idiom or if it was saying like...
The visual of that is just...
Ding, ding, ding.
They've got chimes
ding.
Back there. Bing. Bing, 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 bing.
Yeah, but
it's a curveball.
That's a very elaborate.
So my real question was, if other people do stuff, is this cheating?
Okay.
That's cheating. Banging on pipes is cheating. That's
okay, what if it's just whistling?
But is stealing signs
cheating?
It's
stealing signs cheating.
Here's the difference, is if they're talking about that they are specifically putting cameras where they normally aren't in a stadium and it's not regulation, yeah, then yes, that is cheating. However, sign stealing happens all the time. I don't care if it's baseball, football. As a backup quarterback, one of your jobs to do is to watch the defensive coordinators and figure out who's the one that's actually signaling the plays and what those plays are, yeah, and if there's any little thing that you can pick up on. That's just
part
of the
play.
Maybe
it's like pine tar. It's like, don't make it obvious that you're sign stealing.
Well, is that hard to do?
It is hard to do, and it's not frowned upon. If you guys aren't good at keeping your signs a secret, then that's on you guys.
No. Is it hard for you, the backup quarterback, to decipher who's sending the signals in and what they are?
Sometimes other teams are more sophisticated. They've got a couple different decoys that they try and
what
throw out there.
And
then there's I won't get into it. They won't talk the trade secrets because
blow their cover, Stacey. They won't be able to steal.
You're right.
That's right.
I'll ask you off the air.
So, the Bengals are terrible.
Yeah. So, but you know, then there's some that's very obvious that there's one person calling it in, and you just try and look for repeat signals and stuff like that, and. So, yeah.
Is our universal ruling that no, it is not cheating?
That's not cheating. Jake explained it perfectly.
Okay.
If you're installing extra cameras, you know what? Now that I'm thinking about it, the banging on pipes, that's okay.
Like the Patriots spy, the Patriots spy
bang
gate
away
situation.
Bang, bang, bang.
I'm imagining like through the stadium where they've got a system of like someone from the kitchen and then someone from the ticket office and people are walking
There's
over
like an
all
old,
right, I hear in Morse code and yep, send it to the door.
Or like, coal miner down there.
I was going to say like if the organist plays a certain song like da-na-na-na-na-na.
The whole thing is in on it. The park knows.
What's on tap, Curtis?
This is What's on Tap with Tom, Jake, and Stacey. Brought to you by Tito's Premium Vodka. So, folks, what's on tap?
Oh, we got football tonight. Thank God. The Chiefs.
Again.
What do you mean? Oh, we had South Alabama.
Yeah, we did. Troy.
Troy blew them out, right?
Big Sun Belt rivalry.
37-13.
That was last
just
night.
Just like we expected.
I'm still not sure who the Jaguars are. Chiefs are at the Broncos tonight. I'm predicting an upset, people. Broncos defense has been okay as of late. They're at home. It's Thursday night. I'm at least expecting a closer game. I think also Mahomes is still hurt, right?
He is a little hurt.
And it's thought to be more serious, I think. At least that's the vibe I'm getting from Twitter.
It?
But obviously all these Twitter doctors,
interesting.
Who knows? Interesting.
I find this very interesting just in terms of Patrick Mahomes is finally facing some adversity, like legit adversity. You've got guys on your roster that are hurt. You've got guys that were originally supposed to be on the roster not playing right now. And then you're also dealing with some injury yourself. Mm-hmm. And to me, when you talk about all-time greats, this is when they show that they are great, that they can overcome adversity, that they can overcome injuries, and they can overcome the different people around them. It doesn't matter. They continue to make their team great. And that's something that I believe people should be really focusing on as they're watching Mahomes during this interesting stretch for him, losing two in a row, especially at home. Like you said, Tom, this is a tremendous challenge. It's not going to be a cakewalk for them heading into Mile High Stadium.
We also have Zach Greinke for the Astros going against Masahiro Tanaka of the Yankees. That game four was delayed yesterday, mm-hmm. So they're playing it tonight. That game's at 5:00. We'll be carrying that game starting at 6:00. It'll be joined in progress. Tonight's going to be a big flip night. Because if that Chiefs-Broncos game is at all close within 10 points,
mm-hmm.
I'm probably going to want to keep on watching it for all the reasons we just talked about there.
Yeah.
But, you know, a baseball playoff game.
Well, that's when you get it both. You have your TV and then your laptop going.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
That's what I do.
Do you think this is a 100% make or break game for the Yankees right
now? No, it's not.
If they lose this one, they go down two games?
Well, they'd be down 3-1.
Yeah.
It's not the end of the world.
Okay.
Teams have come back from 3-1 plenty of times.
Okay.
It's not good.
Right.
I mean, they really want to win it, obviously.
What do you kind of want to happen?
I want the Yankees to even it, because I definitely want the series to go at least 6 games.
Yeah.
If the Yankees win tonight, it guarantees
that.
Well,
this is a series that you want to watch,
yeah,
right? Like, this isn't – obviously, you don't want the Yankees to win, but you want it to
no,
be –
No, I do.
You want the Yankees.
Really?
Oh, I thought you were an Astros.
I'm
I thought you were rooting for the Astros.
No.
Okay, so I mean, either way, cool. you want the series to be, you know, one that's fun and one to watch because they're two star-studded teams right now.
Yeah,
so.
I want it to go 7 games between two really good teams. By the way, don't forget, You can join 710 ESPN Seattle at Snoqualmie Casino for a live broadcast from 7 to 9 p.m. It's Hawks Live Thursday nights during the NFL season, hosted by Dave Wyman, Paul Moyer, and Michael Bumpus. And tonight only, it's your chance to win two end zone tickets to the October 20th Seahawks games. Show up wearing your Seahawks colors for a chance to win. Learn more at 710sports.com/events. Coming up next, we're going to hear from Bobby Wagner. He spoke with the media today. That's next on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to Tom, Jake, and Stacy.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Tom Wassel, Jake Heaps, and Stacy Rost.
Maybe Bobby Wagner hasn't gotten as much credit as we should have given him for rallying his troops, rallying the defense last game, because after he took them aside on the sidelines there, they essentially didn't allow any points the rest of the game until the very, very end, where it looked like the Seahawks had the game well in hand anyway. So let's hear from Bobby Wagner right now, speaking with the media.
What reception, Bobby, do you expect for Earl?
It should be appreciation. You know, he did so much for this organization, so much for this team. You know, he's a legend here. So I would expect him to be well received. He's a guy that, you know, Jersey probably be retired. And, you know, it's just a lot of respect for him. It should be a lot of respect for him.
Will you seek him out for the game?
Maybe. I don't know. Like, it is what it is. I don't know if he comes out and warm up. So it might be too late at that point. I'm locked in. I know he's going to be locked in. So I'll find him at some point, still his jersey.
20, 30 years from now, when you look back at playing with Earl Thomas, what do you think you'll remember the most?
Just how fast he was able to get sideline to sideline. I don't think there's anybody that's, you know, able to do some of the things that he did on the field. You know, he was a very, very special player, understood the game of football really, really well. And, you know, I know I played with one of the best, for sure.
What is it going to mean to you to have Jaren Reed back in front of you?
It's going to be great. You know, he's been such a key part of our defense, not just his play, but his leadership. To just have that back and have him back to provide some pass rush, to provide some, you know, in plays in the backfield, it's going to be huge for us.
Do you make a personal point to make sure that your backup is always ready just in case?
100%. You know, I feel like both me and KJ, you know, you're only as good as the guys around you. You know, we got a bunch of knowledge, and we try to give that knowledge away. And, you know, Cody's done a great job. He's a really smart guy. And, you know, I definitely feel like if he had to step it, he could. But, you know, we pride ourselves on, you know, giving knowledge away and allowing, you know, people to excel even though they're not starting. Because at the end of the day, they're feeding their family. And you want everybody to be able to succeed in doing that.
You were always a vocal part of this defense, but in the second quarter when you decided to bring the defense together, at what point do you know that it's time to do something like that? When you overdo it, it loses its message. I mean, what was the tipping point there where you said, look, this isn't going to cut it?
I think the biggest thing was I felt like, you know, they weren't necessarily doing stuff that beat us. It was us not being gap sound or not doing something right at a key moment that was hurting us. And so, you know, I felt like, you know, when you get down like that, your next instinct is to try to overdo it or try to, you know, do something, make, you know, we were down 20-6, so try to get all them points back in one drive. And so I just try to remind the guys that we were fine, we just got to do our job, and we got, you know, three more quarters to come back, and we will.
Where do you feel the defense is just in total for six games? With what you've seen, how the pass rush is developing, the Clowney and Onsa and so forth, and just in general the way the over is?
I feel like we are closer than last year at this point. I feel like, you know, we have a lot of improvement to go. There has been some good games. There's been some not-so-good games. We had some games where we stopped the run. We had some games where we didn't. We had some games where we stopped the pass. We had some games where we didn't. And so I think the main thing is working on the consistency and, you know, doing it over a span of time would be the thing that I feel like we have to do better.
Man, I hope that meeting they had on the sidelines last weekend lasts into this game, don't you?
Absolutely. Just like what he was talking about was needing to be gap sound, right? Like, just the simple aspects of the game. And I've heard people, a couple different people, reference Bill Belichick always saying, you know, do your job. That's something that's preached heavily in this building by this coaching staff and Pete Carroll. You know, just do your job. Do right. If you continue to do right longer than the other team, as simple as that, you're going to win games. And so for Bobby to step up in that moment and to demand better, I think was huge.
But what if the other team does its job?
Well, then you've got
to... It's about who does your job harder.
Well, what if the other team does their job harder?
Well, someone does.
Not everybody does their...
Then you tie.
In a given game, there's
you
not...
tie.
Then you tie.
You tie, but it never happens. So that's...
Hey, I have a question. So
yes.
Earlier in the show, Dave Wyman said, you know, we're going to have a phenomenal game here from Bobby Wagner. Why is that particularly important against the Ravens?
Because their offense is so unique and different from everybody else in the NFL that it's very hard in 1 week to totally capture, understand what they're doing, and then be able to go execute that game plan to stop them. So I referenced this yesterday, was it's very much like facing the academy schools, the navies, the air forces, and army schools where they're running the wing T. And you don't prepare against that, you know, every week. It's only a 1 week thing. And if you're not sound with your gaps, if everybody's not doing their job, they will be able to move the ball up and down on you, no problem. Not to mention that you have a very, very physical, good running back in Mark Ingram, and maybe arguably the most dynamic player in the NFL with Lamar Jackson and his ability to run the football. So this is an incredible challenge of not only just, you know, staying sound with your technique and your job, but also you've got to have players like Bobby Wagner step up. He is your all-pro. He is that player on that defense that has to make not outside of what he needs to do, but he's got to step up and make these impactful plays within the game if they're going to be able to stop their rushing attack with the Baltimore Ravens.
Why do only the academy schools run that offense?
Because they run it. They run.
Is it out of tradition?
No, it's not out of tradition. It is because they're undersized. They're undersized, and so for them, it's the ability to trick people with deception. So we're
you can't have a man that large in a cockpit, Tom.
Yeah,
it's not going to work. They got to get a man with a slight build.
In the
right.
Navy and the Air Force, maybe, but the Army.
Submariners? I don't want them.
Yeah, and getting consistently kids to commit to that type of commitment in terms of the military and all that, it's a tough ask. So a lot of those teams, you're dealing with linemen that are 250 pounds, 260 pounds, and so the only way that they can win is through deception and through, you know, making sure that defenses are having to stay gap sound. It's really all that they can do.
And so conversely, is that the same reason why it's rare to use that offense in the NFL?
It is.
Because you guys are generally much bigger.
Yeah, and there's no size difference between the Ravens and the Seahawks.
Sure.
I mean, up front for the Ravens, they have an incredible offensive line, actually. So it's just something where you talk about adding unique talents. This was something we had a discussion about Marcus Mariota yesterday, is Lamar Jackson has a very particular set of skills. Okay. All right. And the Ravens has looked at these skills and they have said, all right, we are going to uplift him and we are going to accentuate those strengths and not ask him to be something that he's not. So they have turned into a very different, unique offense, very similar. And it's interesting that you have the two Harbaughs doing this and that Greg Roman has worked with both Harbaughs, the Harbaugh brothers, in Colin Kaepernick and Lamar Jackson. And they're using this, you know, the quarterback in a very unique way. So this is going to be a tremendous challenge for them as a defense. And if they can stop the Ravens offense, which very few have been able to do, you could see this as a potential 10-point to 2-touchdown win just based off of the style that they play.
We sum it up next on 710 ESPN Seattle.
But wait, it's over.
They're coming away, baby.
It's time to sum it up with Tom, Jake, and Stacy.
Shot clock turned up.
The final word on everything that matters today in sports.
Step back.
I'm already psyched up for tomorrow's show.
Really?
12:45, baby.
That's right. You're it's gonna... Ravens.
Ravens!
Going
Ravens.
Down, Tom.
No, you're going down.
I had a long drive last week, and I...
to think to yourself.
it was very hard.
What, a long drive home?
Yes, it was very hard.
Did you feel like... do you feel like in general, because you're an ex-football player, if a non-football player beats you at a football trivia game, like you're half a man?
Partly, yes, Tom. Thank you for rubbing that in.
No, I'm just asking how you feel, because I don't care.
Sure. Don't worry. I'll be extra motivated tomorrow.
Yeah.
Good luck, okay. Is all I'll say. Good luck.
Stacey's going to come.
That's a threat.
Stacey's going to come at it with some great questions.
I'm going to make it a little trickier this week, I think.
Are you?
Well, because I feel like now that you guys have evened up the series and you're a little more competitive, there's actually some studying that's going into it for you guys.
Oh, my goodness.
Versus the first 2 weeks with Rams, and Browns. I don't know that you guys were as prepared as you'll probably be. So both you and listeners will learn a lot about the Ravens.
Okay. Do you think we're going to study? Is that what you were just saying?
Jake literally said when he sat down, like, oh, great, a study guide, when he picked up the media guide.
Oh.
Didn't you? You said a version of that. He said, oh, I got it. Oh, no.
I did
you
not.
Said, I had written down a question already for the test, and Jake
yeah,
said,
but if I do that, that's cheating. Like,
that's
I can't,
true. Try
I can't
not
do
to
that.
Study.
I'm not going to study.
Yeah, don't. I want you to go on your gut because that's the point. It's supposed to be your, it's you and fans and listeners, your immediate thoughts of what is the Ravens team right now.
And me being better than Tom at the trivia.
Totally.
That's part of it.
Well, you're not. That's the thing.
Well, we don't know
funny,
that
the
yet.
Funny part about it is you're not.
Right now you're even. You're even with the trivia.
You know, I think it's a cool thing, too, with the Ravens because – with all these AFC teams, especially in the North, I mean, I figure we know something about the Steelers. They're always a good team. They're always relevant. The Ravens are one of those teams. Same
it's
with Cincinnati. Yeah, it's like, you know what? I know Lamar Jackson, the name,
yeah.
The person.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I know what he's known for as far as his running ability. But I don't really know what that looks like on the field. I remember watching them in the playoffs last year, I think in the wild card round, get beat pretty badly by the Chargers.
Yeah.
They kind of came back at the end, but I didn't really get to see that offense look as it should. So when they come up here, it's like, all right, well, what is that really going to look like? Will it confuse the Seahawks at all?
I promise you that there will be plays tomorrow or on Sunday from Lamar Jackson that you're going to go, oh my gosh!
I didn't know you could do that kind
of. Yeah, like I didn't know that a quarterback in particular could do that. Even just players in general. I mean, his ability to stop and start on a dime is special.
I have a real question.
Yes.
Stemming from our last.
Oh, good.
I
don't like the
to.
Non-real questions.
No,
that you
I know
threw out
this
there.
One's a real one. So last week, Lamar Jackson had like 260 some odd passing yards, 150 so rushing yards.
Mm-hmm.
When he unleashes like that against a team, what does that defense do wrong? Is it what when people are like, well, you didn't contain him. Like, what really goes into making that mistake?
Well, here's the hard part is we're talking about just the straight rushing attack, the design run plays. But the other side of it as well is that when they pass, you could have it perfectly covered and everything's right. And Lamar Jackson, just like Russell Wilson does at times, will tuck the ball and get a first down. And it's the most frustrating thing for a defense. And he has that ability to do that. And that's the part where it can be really tough. Basically, what is so difficult about the Ravens is we talk about these academy schools. They typically are not very good at passing the football whatsoever. And they may be able to get a few throws down the field, some big plays. Well, this Ravens offense is not elite at passing the football, but they are more than capable. And they've got more than enough weapons to make you pay. And so the run definitely sets up the pass for these guys. And if you let them establish the run and get comfortable with that, it's going to be a long day because they're going to be able to do whatever they want, run pass, get Mark Andrews involved, get him past the linebackers, all that stuff. So those are the concerns that you really have.
Can you guys imagine being Joe Flacco last year after last year's draft when the Ravens took this kid, being like, man, this kid can absolutely do it all.
Well, you know at that point.
Right. If I don't play at a Super Bowl level like I did, 5 years ago at that point.
Yeah.
What am I even doing here? And they ended up, starting Lamar Jackson, week 11 last year?
Yeah. Yeah,
I think?
Late towards the year. And the crazy part about it was they were pretty much looking like they were out of playoff contention. Lamar Jackson, you know, wins every game the rest of the regular season, and they get into the playoffs. So it also just goes to show Lamar Jackson's playmaking ability. And so with all of that, you just look at this game, and like I said yesterday, I'm nervous. I'm nervous about this game and the way that the Ravens match up with the Seahawks. But you could say that pretty much about every game because of the style, the way the Seahawks play, and the fact that this defense hasn't been dominant up to this point.
You didn't get to fluster these guys early. I mean, it's here. Seahawk crowd. I'm sure back in Baltimore, and maybe we should have asked Kadri Ishmael this, I mean, for the Ravens, for any team to be coming up here, they know how the Seahawks play up here. They know what their record is over the last 8 or 9 years here. They know it's a difficult place to win no matter what. And the defense here, look, they may not be what they were 5 years ago, but they're still playing okay right now.
Mm-hmm.
So I feel like they had the tougher task. Like Jermaine Effetti sat here and said, they got to deal with me too. Or not me, but us.
Correct.
Right? This isn't just like the Lamar Jackson, you know, touring parade where it's like, oh, God, here comes Lamar Jackson. It's like, well, here come the Seahawks, too.
Right. Mm-hmm.
The Seahawks are still a difficult
team
to beat up here. Absolutely, they do.
Yeah, and that's the part where for the Seahawks, that's definitely going to be their mindset. Lamar Jackson, he went into Arrowhead Stadium, struggled a little bit, and I do believe that the 12s are going to play a major factor into this game, as they do always, but especially with a young rookie quarterback. So that will be another element that he has to deal with and figure out.
Do you think the booing of Earl Thomas will help them at all?
Don't boo Earl Thomas.
Booing of Earl Thomas, I don't think would help too much. But hey, whatever you feel in the moment as a fan, I guess you know that's what you're going to do. I would say
I don't think he's going to get booed that much.
I don't think he will either. I would say there to me, it's more of indifference. Like you're on the other team. I am booing the opponent rather than going after a particular player. But that's just me. I sit here and I say for at this point in time, the Seahawks have more experience playing in tight games, close games, and coming out on top. And that's why I feel more confident, you know, giving the edge to the Seahawks ultimately. But there's certainly a lot of challenges that the Ravens present.
Well, let's hold off on our predictions because we got our picks tomorrow.
Right? I'm not giving any predictions right now. Don't make any mistakes.
I'm just saying we were getting Jake started leaning up and getting like physically like ready to be like, let's talk about this.
Let's dig into this right now.
this for another 3 hours.
I know.
Predictions tomorrow, picks tomorrow, game shows tomorrow.
Ravens.
Michael Bumpus will be tomorrow also. Sauk, the whole thing. Tom, Jake, and Stacy, 710 ESPN Seattle.